a sudden silence, the fury of his words momentarily shocking them both into silence.
Then Jace came around from behind his table and placed his hands on Satil's shoulders.
"I'm sorry, Satil. I didn't mean that the way it sounded. But I can't do what you do. I can't just brush away all the pain the Empire has caused."
"Revenge won't ease that pain, Jace."
"When the war first started, I used to keep a list of every friend I'd seen die in battle,"
Jace told her.
"I'd recite their names each night before I went to sleep, trying to remember their faces, clinging to their memories. As the war dragged on, the list grew longer. After a few years, it was too long for me to recite each night. Then it became too long for me to even remember them all. Hundreds and hundreds of good men and women, their lives taken by the Empire. And every Imperial soldier that isn't captured or killed is someone who might add another name to that list. That's why I have to send out my patrols. That's why we have to hunt the enemy down like animals. I owe it to the names on that list."
Satil remained silent as he spoke, but his words filled her with horror and dread. She knew Jace was loyal, but she'd never imagined his loyalty to his fallen friends would be the catalyst for so much anger.
"Killing Imperials can't bring back the people on the list," she told him.
"Killing Imperials is how we win this war," he told her. "And winning the war is the only way to stop adding names to my list."
"This is a dangerous path, Jace. You're taking the love for your friends and turning it into something dark and twisted. Something that will drive you to evil."
"We don't see things the same way," Jace explained. "I'm not a Jedi."
"What if something happens to me?"
Satil wondered.
"What happens if one day you add my name to your list?"
Silently, she added.
"Or your child's."
Jace's expression was grim.
"I'd rain destruction down on the Empire," he said quietly. "I'd destroy their cities and burn their worlds."
"That's not what I would want."
"I know,"
Jace answered.
"But I can't help who I am."
After a few seconds, he added,
"And I don't think we're really that different. If something happened to me, I don't believe you could pretend it didn't matter. I think in your grief and anger, you'd lash out at the Empire, too."
"That's not the Jedi way,"
she said. But even as she spoke the words, she wondered if Jace was right. How could she not hate the Empire if they took away the man she loved? How could she not hate them if they had the blood of her unborn child on their hands?
I'm not a soldier,"
she said, her voice uncertain as she took a step back from him.
"I'm a Jedi."
"It's okay, Satil,"
Jace said, stepping toward her and extending his hand. She turned and rushed from the tent, ignoring him as he called out for her to wait. She fled beyond the perimeter of the camp and into the cover of the night's darkness, where she finally stopped and collapsed on the ground. Her breath was coming in ragged gasps that quickly turned into hitching sobs as she was drowned in a flood of powerful emotions. The tears came next, and she didn't try to stop them. She cried for several minutes before slowly collecting herself. The flow of tears dried up, and her sobs became a soothing rhythm of inhale, exhale. She recognized that part of her reaction was due to the hormones coursing through her pregnant body, and some of it was due to her still struggling to accept the fact that she was going to have a child. But that couldn't explain everything away. She had sensed the hate and darkness inside Jace before, though it had taken the impending birth of their child to make her confront him about it. What she hadn't realized was that the same potential for hate and anger lurked inside her as well. Her feelings for Jace were too strong. If something happened to him, she feared all her Jedi training wouldn't be able to save her from seeking vengeance against the Empire. With her child, she knew it would be even worse.
"This path leads to the dark side," she said.
And in that moment of clarity, Satil knew what she had to do. Satil opened her eyes as the memories faded away. They still hurt, even 3 decades later. As much as she wanted to believe she could master and control her emotions, when it came to Theron and Jace, she had to recognize that it simply wasn't possible. They would always evoke a powerful reaction in her. It was a weakness she had to acknowledge. If she were to confront Jace about his potentially harmful influence on their son, it would only make things worse. Like Theron, he would react to her interference with anger, and she would inevitably respond in kind. Better not to get involved any further. She had cut them out of her life for a reason. It was the only way she could fully serve the Republic. She had sacrificed her chance to have a family and an ordinary life when she chose the Order. And hard as it was, she couldn't go back on that decision now. Chapter 20. Nost Dural was already waiting for him when Theron arrived at the shuttle. He expected him to ask if he had spoken with Satil, but the Keldor didn't bring it up.
So, where do we go to meet this contact of yours?
Jigani Port, Theron said. On Deceivro. Tracking Tepeth down hadn't been hard. The SIS had a well-established network of informants at all the major spaceports that weren't under Imperial control. Getting information on the movements of people passing through the ports in the Hutt worlds or non-affiliated sectors like the Tian hegemony was a routine procedure, provided the target wasn't taking unusual steps to conceal his or her identity. The purpose of the network wasn't really to allow Theron to get regular updates on a small-time criminal working for the old Tian Brotherhood. But he wasn't the only agent who used SIS resources to track individuals for non-official reasons. The director normally turned a blind eye to these minor violations if the agents didn't overly abuse the system. Though now that Tepeth could actually be useful to the Republic, there was no reason to worry about being discreet. As the Jedi punched in the coordinates to the Prosperity's nav computer, Theron's mind kept drifting back to his meeting with Satil and her warnings about Jace. It wasn't like him to lose his composure. Satil hadn't done or said anything that didn't fit with what he expected from a Jedi Master. It really shouldn't have set him off like it did.
Prepare for liftoff.
Theron understood that in the grand scheme of things, the Jedi were good to have around. The Republic wouldn't have survived without them. And though there may be differences between how they perceived the war against the Empire and how the rest of the Republic viewed it, in the end they were all on the same side. So why had he lashed out so intensely at Satil? Was it because, as Grand Master, all the stereotypical Jedi traits he found most irritating were amplified in her? Or was it just because she was his mother? Their shuttle took to the sky, breaking Coruscant's atmosphere a few seconds later. Once it was clear of the planet's orbital flight lanes, Nost Dural flipped the switch, and they made the jump to hyperspace. As the starfield through the cockpit window became a blur of white, Theron decided he might as well pass the time by finding out if his partner shared Satil's opinions about the Supreme Commander.
I met with Grandmaster Shan, he said.
Good,
Nost Dural replied.
I trust the meeting went well.
Theron still didn't know if the Keldor knew Satil was his mother, so he decided not to bring it up.
She has some concerns about Jace Malcolm. She's worried he's driven by hate and vengeance. She's afraid he might slip over to the dark side.
Grandmaster Shan knows him better than I do. They served together many times. It is possible she saw something in him that troubled her.
You don't sound too worried about it.
It's a common fear in our order when we work with the military. Jedi are not soldiers. We do not approach war with the same mentality. Times of galactic strife and suffering will inevitably force the Republic into a struggle between the darkness and the light. As Jedi, it is our role to try to keep the Republic on the proper path. At times this can lead to tension and conflict, particularly when dealing with someone as strong-willed as Jace Malcolm. But it does not mean we are not all working to achieve the same goals.
Sounds pretty reasonable when you say it like that, said Theron.
I'm surprised Grandmaster Shan didn't explain this to you herself.
Maybe she tried, Theron admitted. But the words she used didn't really get through.
Sometimes personalities clash. Even the Grand Master is not the right teacher for every student.
Theron bristled momentarily at the implication that he was learning at Nos Dural's feet, but he quickly brushed his irritation aside. The Keldor hadn't meant anything by his words. It was just that odd way Jedi had of speaking that made normal folks feel like they were being condescending.
Maybe half the problem is you, he chided himself. Gotta stop being so sensitive.
He yawned, suddenly aware of how tired he was. He hadn't slept well after his meeting with Satil.
I'm gonna grab 40 winks. Wake me when we get to Decevro.
The customs authorities at Jagani Port weren't anything like Imperial security on Zyost. They didn't require clearance papers or approvals, or even an official ship registration. All they wanted was someone to pay the 50-credit docking fee and a 100-credit deposit on the hangar. Theron paid them out of his own pocket, not bothering to get a receipt so he could apply for reimbursement later. He wasn't sure how much of this mission was coming out of the SIS budget, but considering the Jedi had supplied the ship, he didn't mind footing the bill for parking.
Where to now?
Nos Dural asked Theron as he paid the customs official.
If I know Tefith, she'll be hanging around the dirtiest, nastiest, most dangerous spot to get a drink in this place.
That'd be the Crooked Finger,
the customs agent answered.
Not sure it's your kind of place, fellas,
he said, glancing up at the Jedi's luxury shuttle.
Want me to arrange a security escort?
It wasn't difficult to understand his concern. Nos Dural was wearing nondescript robes rather than his Jedi garb, and his lightsaber was tucked out of sight. Theron had donned his custom bracers with a full complement of toxin darts and a recharged pinpoint laser, but not everyone would realize they were more than just a stylish choice of wardrobe. And the single blaster on his hip looked woefully underpowered for the kind of people they were bound to run into wandering Jagani Port's seedier dives.
We can handle ourselves, Theron assured him. Just point us in the right direction.
When they reached the Crooked Finger, it was everything Theron had expected. Dimly lit to hide the dirt and grime, and overflowing with a motley assortment of heavily armed thugs and criminals. Music from a slightly out-of-time live band spilled out the door, along with the clamor of the patrons shouting to be heard above the music. A pair of large Nyctos sitting by the door sprang up as they entered, barring their way.
Cover charge to get in,
the bigger of the two said.
50 credits each.
Theron highly doubted they actually worked for the bar, but he didn't see the point in starting something. Before he could dig out any more credits, though, Nos Dural intervened.
No cover for us,
he said, waving his hand in front of him in an almost hypnotic gesture.
We're friends of the owner.
Guess we can let you through,
the smaller Nikto answered as he and his friend stepped to the side.
Seeing us how you know the owner.
Once they were inside, Theron leaned in close enough for Nos Dural to hear him above the music and the general din of the crowd.
Do you know how much easier my life would be if I could learn that trick?
He said.
Best thing about being a Jedi, if you ask me.
It doesn't work on everyone. Only those with weak minds. Nikto are particularly susceptible.
They made their way through the maze of tables and chairs, Theron's eyes scanning the bar for a yellow-skinned Twi'lek. He spotted her sitting at a table in the back corner with a scrawny-looking Rodian. Theron had expected her to be sitting alone. Tefith didn't normally make friends.
There she is,
he told his companion.
Better let me do the talking.
As they drew near, he could see that the Rodian was talking animatedly with Tefith. He couldn't make out the words, but the Rodian's lips were moving, his ears were twitching, and his hands gesticulated wildly. Tefith, on the other hand, was barely paying attention. She looked bored, or maybe drunk, sitting slumped forward in her seat with her hands folded in her lap beneath the table.
Hello, Tepeth, Theron said when they reached the table. Mind if we sit down?
Her dissatisfied posture vanished as she whipped a blaster up from under the table. Clearly she'd had it in her lap the entire time. The Rhodian's eyes opened wide, then went back to normal once he realized she wasn't pointing the pistol at him.
Saw you across the room, Tepeth said to Theron. Too crowded to shoot until you got close.
Despite her words, Theron knew she had no intention of actually pulling the trigger. Not unless he gave her a reason to.
You get to count of three to walk away,
she said, her oddly accented basic still as impossible to place as Theron remembered.
There's no need for the pistol,
Nostral said, his hand making the same slow wave he'd used on the Nikto at the door.
We are all friends here.
A strange look crossed over Tepeth's face, and the tip of her blaster dipped momentarily, only to pop back up and take dead aim at Theron's midsection.
Not friends. One.
I'm not here checking up on you,
Theron reassured her.
I'm just here to talk business.
Not interested. Deal was you leave us alone. Two.
The job pays well,
Theron continued.
If you can handle it. Maybe we should listen to him,
the Rhodian chimed in. Tepeth glared at him before turning her gaze back to Theron.
Vib convinced us,
she said, placing the blaster flat on the table.
You sit, you talk, we listen. Then we shoot you.
Theron and Nostral settled into the two open seats at the table.
Ugly Head got a name?
Tepeth asked, nodding at the Keldor.
Nostral,
he answered, not even slightly offended by the insult.
Master Nostral, Theron clarified. He's a Jedi, like Master Zhou.
Zhou not like other Jedi,
Tepeth grunted, and Theron couldn't argue with that.
Your assistance on Zyost was quite helpful,
the Keldor said, trying to get on her good side.
You cutting deals with outsiders behind Gorbich's back?
Veb said, shaking his head.
That's bad business, Tef.
Tepeth shot Nostral an angry glare before turning her attention back to Theron.
You said you got another job?
Everyone knows the Brotherhood smuggles contraband onto the Imperial space stations,
Theron said, speaking quickly.
You've got the contacts, you've got the clearance codes, and you've got the ships.
We know what we got. You got the points?
I want you to help us get onto one of the space stations.
Which one?
We don't really know yet. It's going to be sort of a last-minute thing when it happens.
Tepeth shook her head.
Can't help.
What are you talking about, Tef?
The Rhodian exclaimed.
Gorvitch can pull this off no problem.
Shut up, Veb.
Tepeth growled. Turning to Theron, she said,
Too dangerous. Another crazy mission.
Nodding in Nostral's direction, she added,
Another crazy Jedi.
Come on, Tepeth. You won't even have to be involved. Just set up another meeting with someone who can help us out.
Already set up meeting for you,
she said.
One per customer.
Don't do it for me, then,
Theron said, reaching for one last card to play.
Do it because it's the right thing. Do it because Nagani Zhou would have wanted you to help us. It's the least you can do for him, now that he's gone.
Zhou's debt's non-transferable,
she said, but Theron could see her resolve softening at the mention of their old friend. Tepeth hadn't been around Zhou for long, but he knew they'd formed a powerful bond. His mentor had that effect on people.
I'll throw in enough credits to choke a Bantha,
Theron offered.
Okay,
she finally agreed.
We take you to Gorvitch, but that's it. Then you disappear. For real this time.
Of course, Theron promised her. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Chapter 21 Huddled with Nostral in the back of the airspeeder, taking them from Jagani Port to the nearby city of Maslavar, Theron was convinced they would drop out of the sky at any moment. The constant high-pitched whine of the engine made conversation impossible, and every few minutes, the pilot had to drop them to a height of only a few meters above DeCivro's swampy surface to keep the repulsor lift from overheating. The stabilizers weren't much better, and each time a gust of wind hit them, the speeder threatened to flip over. The flight lasted only 20 minutes, but by the time they touched down in the center of the city, Theron's stomach was trying to crawl up and out of his throat.
"Best hotel in Maslovar,"
their pilot proclaimed as his passengers climbed out of the back seat. Looking at the dilapidated building before them, Theron was convinced there had to be a better option. But he wasn't eager to get back on the speeder anytime soon.
"Maybe it won't be as bad as it looks,"
he silently hoped as they collected their bags and headed inside. Tefith had agreed to set up a meeting with Gorvitch 3 days from now. Theron wasn't happy about the delay, but she insisted it would take some time to pull together everything they'd need to get past Imperial security on whichever space station ended up being their destination. Until then, there was nothing for Theron and Nos Dural to do but wait. They'd asked Tefith to recommend a place to stay. Seeing where she'd sent them made it clear she still wasn't happy about working with him.
"We need a room," Theron said at the check-in desk. "3 nights, 2 beds."
The woman behind the counter didn't speak as she punched at the buttons on her console. Eventually, she produced a pair of key cards.
60 credits per night. Pay up front.
Theron slid the credits across the counter, and she handed him the key cards.
"Level 6, top floor. Turbo lift is broken."
Theron prepared himself for the worst as he entered the room. And he wasn't disappointed. An unidentifiable but distinctly unpleasant odor wafted out to meet them as the door slid open, and Theron was certain he heard the scuttling of vermin running for cover as he flicked on the lights.
"There is no comfort, only filth," he mumbled.
"We could return to the shuttle. There are sleeping quarters, a shower, and a refresher on board."
"I think the floor of the shuttle would be more comfortable than this place," Theron agreed. "But I need a few minutes before I can handle another speeder ride like the last one."
"You and Tefith have an interesting relationship,"
Nos Dural said.
"It's not really a relationship," Theron explained. "She's just one of my contacts."
"She is clearly more than that."
"Nagani Jo saw something in her. He took her under his wing. I guess I feel responsible for her now that he's gone."
"Do you have feelings for her?"
Theron laughed.
"Not like you're implying. She's more like a kid sister. Annoying, always getting into trouble. But you know there's good buried somewhere deep inside."
"It must be buried very deep for her to send you to a place like this."
"She's not going to double-cross us," Theron assured him.
"Because of her respect for Master Jo?"
"It's not just that. She's got honor. She could have abandoned me on Darth Mekkis' flagship. Could have taken my shuttle and left me to die there when it self-destructed. But she didn't. She waited while the whole place was collapsing around her. Gave me time to get back to the shuttle."
"No wonder she's hostile. She saved your life. And now you come and ask her for another favor. You are the one in debt to her."
Before Theron could reply, the cybernetic implant in his right ear buzzed.
"Hold on,"
he said to Nos Dural, holding up a hand for silence.
"Incoming call from the director,"
he whispered.
"Accept incoming,"
before saying more loudly,
"Director, any news?"
"The bird is coming back to the nest. The one in the Mannix tree."
From the analytics report, Theron knew there were just a handful of Imperial space stations large enough to accommodate a vessel the size of the spear. Only one was located in a system starting with the same letter as Mannix, Reaver Station, in the Moranis system on the Outer Rim.
"Copy. What's the timetable?"
"Landing tomorrow. Should splash around in the bird bath for 2 days before flying south for the winter."
"Got it. Anything else?"
"Nothing relevant,"
the director said after a brief pause.
"Good luck,"
he added, ending the call before Theron could ask any more questions.
"Disconnect,"
Theron whispered, as the static of the open channel hissed softly in his ear. He waited for the comlink to click off before telling Nos D'Rahl,
"The Spear's docking at Reaver Station to give the crew 2 days of R&R.
"When?"
"Tomorrow. By the time we meet with Tefeth's contact, they'll already be back on active duty."
"It might be weeks, maybe even months before the Spear docks again."
"We need to convince Gorvitch to move a little faster,"
Theron agreed. Theron didn't believe it was possible, but the speeder that took them back to Jagani Port was in even worse shape than the previous one. But his stomach wasn't lurching when they touched down this time. He was too focused on the mission. Returning to the Crooked Finger, they found Tefeth and her Rhodian friend still sitting at the same table where they had left them an hour earlier.
"Didn't like the hotel?"
Tefeth asked when she saw them approaching.
"Change of plans," Theron said. "We need to see Gorvitch today, right now."
The Twi'lek shook her head.
"Impossible. 3 days, remember?"
"I'm not playing around, Tefeth."
Something in his voice made her take notice, and she let out a long sigh.
"We take you to Gorvitch. Follow us."
The instant Gorvitch opened the door to his apartment, Theron disliked him. He was dressed in expensive, overly fashionable clothes, dark tailor-fit slacks and a patterned shirt made from expensive Sava silk. He was wearing several ostentatious rings and a thick gold chain dangled from his neck. His hair was blonde, his features average, but there was something distasteful about his look, an expression on his face, and the way he carried himself that elicited a powerful sense of revulsion. When he opened his mouth to speak, he did nothing to offset the first impression, his voice arrogant, mocking, and self-obsessed all at the same time.
"Hey, sunshine,"
he said to Tefeth by way of greeting, flashing her a lecherous grin that made Theron want to pop him in the nose.
"These the big spenders you told me about?"
"Gorvitch, Theron,"
Tefeth said, making her introduction as brief as possible.
"You two talk. We're done."
Gorvitch laughed.
"Sunshine hasn't succumbed to my charms yet, but she'll come around. They all do. I have a special relationship with the ladies."
"Keep talking,"
Tefeth said, tapping the handle of her blaster.
"Make it so you never have a special relationship ever again."
He responded with a wink and another laugh, before turning his attention to Theron.
"Come on in. Let's talk business."
The three of them followed him into the living room. Though the apartment was small, it was well furnished. Theron noticed that all the pieces appeared new, and they seemed more suited for a much larger place.
"He's getting a little taste of success,"
Theron thought.
"Figures he'll be moving on to bigger and better things in the near future."
Gorvitch settled himself into an oversized easy chair, but didn't invite his guests to sit. Instead, he left them standing awkwardly in the center of the room.
"Trying to make us feel uncomfortable. Inferior, like we're servants waiting on him." "Heard you need to get aboard an Imperial space station,"
Gorvitch began.
"Gonna have to throw together clearance papers for the whole lot of them, since you don't know which one you want to visit. Gotta charge you extra for that."
"We know where we're going now,"
Theron told him.
"Reaver Station." "Still gotta charge you extra, I'm afraid,"
Gorvitch said with an affected shrug.
"Started the paperwork when Tefeth first called."
"Fine, whatever,"
Theron said, knowing he didn't have time to argue.
"But we need to leave today, or the deal's off."
"You must be inhaling some of your Keldor buddy's atmosphere. That stuff will rot your brain. No way I can pull it all together today."
"It's today or not at all,"
Theron insisted.
"Do you know how complicated this is? We need uniforms, IDs, clearance papers, an Imperial shuttle.
The old Tian Brotherhood moves thousands of credits worth of contraband spice and stims through Imperial space stations every week,"
Theron said.
"You telling me you don't have that stuff on hand and ready to go?"
I might be able to scramble something up in a few hours,
Gorbachev admitted.
But I'm gonna have to charge you a premium for short notice.
Not a problem,
Theron assured him, though he wasn't sure that was true. They had a lockbox stuffed with 30,000 credits hidden away in a secret security compartment on Nosterol's shuttle, but Gorbachev had all the leverage, and he knew it. It was possible he might come up with a ridiculous price they couldn't meet with the funds on hand, and authorizing more credits from SIS would take time, not to mention a transfer of that size to any account on a gang-ridden planet like Deceivro was bound to attract all kinds of attention from anyone involved in the transaction. Theron decided not to bring this up, however. Better to negotiate the deal, than try to convince Gorbachev to settle on a lower price once he'd already done the work to get everything ready.
You know I can't do anything for your friend there,
Gorbachev told him.
Ain't no Keldor in the Imp Army. I'll stick out like a sore thumb.
I will stay out of sight on the shuttle. I assume the kind of clearances you procure will allow us to avoid a search of our vessel?
We have a couple of security folks we pay to look the other way.
So, do we have a deal?
Theron wanted to know.
You don't know my price yet. Just name it. 40,000 credits.
Done,
Theron said with no hesitation, relying on his partner to be smart enough to play along. Fortunately, Nosterol didn't show any reaction. 2 hours later, they were in Gorbachev's private hangar, while he walked them through the Imperial shuttle he procured. Tefeth was still hanging around, though she hadn't said more than two words the entire time.
Standard Imperial fleet issue,
Gorbachev said, pointing to a uniform draped over the pilot's chair.
Made you a corporal. Any rank higher than that starts to attract too much attention. You know who to salute and when? You mess that up and people are gonna notice.
I think I can handle it,
Theron said. This wouldn't be the first time he'd gone undercover as an enemy combatant.
Got your clearance codes programmed into the ship's computer. All you have to do is send them when they ask for verification. They'll have you dock over on C-Wing. We got an understanding with security there. Shouldn't give you any trouble. After that, you're on your own.
Gorbachev scratched at the stubble on his chin and squinted one eye at Theron.
Tefeth never did say why you were going there. You ain't selling nothing, are you? Because the Brotherhood won't be too happy if you cut them out.
The way you tried to cut Morbo out of your deal on Nar Shaddaa?
Theron thought.
Got a cousin stationed on one of the capital ships,
Theron said aloud.
Docking at Reaver Station. He's done with the war. Wants me to come get him out.
Desertion and dereliction of duty,
Gorbachev said with a nod.
That I can understand.
Anything else we need to know?
Theron asked.
Guess not. Just hand over the credits and you're on your way.
They're on our ship,
Theron said.
Great,
Gorbachev said, rubbing his hands together in excitement.
Let's go get him.
When they reached the Prosperity's hangar, Gorbachev let out a long whistle of appreciation.
Nice ride,
Tefeth grudgingly admitted.
Wait here,
Theron said, as he tapped in the code to open up the boarding ramp, then climbed up and into the shuttle. Nosterol didn't bother to come with him. Theron was glad to see the Jedi had no problem letting him take the lead when it was appropriate. Even better, he knew his partner had his back if something should go wrong, as it had at the ODCC on Xyost. He opened the hidden security panel and dragged out the lockbox, then carried it back down the boarding ramp and set it at Gorbachev's feet and opened it.
Isn't that a pretty sight, sunshine?
Gorbachev said.
Just hand over our cut,
Tefeth replied.
Give me a minute to count it. Make sure your friends aren't pulling a fast one.
About that, Theron said. There's only 30,000 credits there. That's all we've got.
So go get more,
Gorbachev growled.
We don't have time,
Theron told him.
Not sure I'd trust anyone around here with that kind of transaction anyway.
Theron was watching the other man closely, ready in case he went for his weapon. Shooting Gorbachev might mess up the plan, The corrupt guards on Reaver Station could be friends of his, but he wasn't going to let Gorvitch get the drop on him. In the back of his mind, he wondered whose side Tefeth would be on if things got ugly.
"We agreed on 40,
Gorvitch reminded him.
"I'm good for it,"
Theron assured him.
30 now, and 10 when we get back.
I'm not convinced you're gonna make it back. I need enough credits to cover the cost of the shuttle in case you mess up and the imps don't let you leave.
There was no way the simple Imperial supply shuttle Gorvitch was lending them was worth anything above 20,000 credits, but Theron wasn't going to argue the point.
Tell you what,
he said.
We get back, we'll give you another 20 instead of 10.
Gorvitch was silent as he considered the offer.
Good money, Gorvitch,
Tefeth chimed in.
Easy money.
Okay, here's the deal. 30 up front, 20 when you get back, and you leave me the command codes to your shuttle as collateral.
The Prosperity's worth at least 50,000 credits on its own,
Theron protested.
Not to mention Nostral might have some sensitive information on board,
he thought.
Good incentive to come back,
Gorvitch said.
Wouldn't want you to rescue your cousin and then take off somewhere.
From his tone, it was clear he didn't buy Theron's cover story. Theron glanced over at Nostral, who gave him a slight nod.
Okay, we have a deal.
Let me throw in one last wrinkle,
Gorvitch said with a grin.
You take Tefeth with you.
What?
The Twi'lek exclaimed.
Why?
Not sure what these two are really up to,
Gorvitch said.
But I want someone to keep an eye on them. Make sure they don't do anything that's gonna cause trouble for the Brotherhood.
So you go,
Tefeth spat.
Sounds a little too risky for me. Besides, you're the one who brokered this deal. You're the one vouching for these two.
Just wanted the credits,
Tefeth protested. Gorvitch shrugged.
That's the deal, sunshine. You go with them, or we cancel the whole thing.
Tefeth glared at Theron, then over at Gorvitch.
Want a higher cut? Hazard pay?
Sure thing, sunshine,
Gorvitch said.
I'll throw in an extra 3,000 when you get back. If you get back.
She turned on Theron.
You dragging us on another suicide mission?
He shook his head.
Quick in and out,
he promised.
A couple of hours and you're heading back. Easy money.
Spend the credits before we get back,
she warned Gorvitch.
And you wake up missing a finger.
Sounds like we have a deal,
he said with a smile.
Chapter 22.
Compared with the Prosperity, the interior of the Imperial Supply Shuttle was cramped and uncomfortable. It had seating for four, but because most of the rear was occupied by the cargo hold, the chairs were jammed two by two in the cockpit, with hardly any leg room. When Theron tried to sit in the pilot seat, Tefeth pushed him aside.
You sit in back,
she ordered. Knowing she was still fuming over being forced to accompany them on the mission, he didn't bother to argue. Nostral took a seat in the co-pilot's chair beside Tefeth without comment.
At least this Imperial uniform's a good fit,
Theron thought, as he squeezed into the seat behind Tefeth. But though it was the right size, he knew from past undercover experience that the cheap material of the cuffs and collar would still end up chafing his skin.
Just one more reason nobody should ever enlist with the Empire.
A few minutes later, they were on their way to Reaver Station, a journey that would take roughly 10 hours at the shuttle's top hyperspace speed. Theron would have been fine passing the journey in silence, but Nostral seemed to have other ideas.
Your friend Gorvitch is an unpleasant man.
Gorvitch is no friend. Just work for him. Pays good.
So that's your driving motivation in life. Material wealth.
Tell Ugly Face not to get all Jedi preachy,
Tefeth said over her shoulder to Theron.
Sorry,
Theron replied.
Jedi can't help trying to save someone they think is in need of moral guidance. It's like a compulsion with them.
Don't need saving.
Tefeth said to Nostral.
You don't mind spending your life surrounded by people like Gorvitch?
Just a stepping stone. Won't be there forever. Moving up the Brotherhood ranks.
And when you do, you'll find those in charge are even more selfish, brutal, and vicious than Gorvitch.
Why are we really going to River Station?
Tefeth asked, changing the subject.
To rid the galaxy of a great evil,
Nostral replied. Tefeth snorted.
Gorvitch is plenty evil. Should rid the galaxy of him.
If you hate him so much,
Theron asked from the back,
why'd you save him on Nar Shaddaa?
Don't leave partners behind. Even scum like Gorvitch. Part of being a team.
The next few minutes passed in silence before she returned to her earlier line of inquiry.
What's going down at River Station? Need to know if things get ugly.
Don't worry, Theron assured her. You just need to drop me off and wait inside the shuttle with Master Nostral for a few hours while I take care of some business. That's it. Easy.
Too easy. Not your style.
Maybe I've changed.
Another snort from Tefeth ended all conversation until they reached their destination, and Theron allowed himself to slip into a light, meditative trance. Yet another useful trick he'd learned from Nagani Joe, to rest up and ready himself for what lay ahead. When they finally dropped from hyperspace, they had a clear view of Reaver Station. The massive spaceport was the size of a small moon. Struggling to look over Tefeth's shoulder, Theron could make out an enormous capital ship docked on the far side.
The Ascendant Spear. Go ahead and open a hailing frequency, Theron said, then added, better let me do the talking.
Tefeth clicked the transmit button on the shuttle's control panel, but she didn't give him a chance to speak.
Reva Station, this is Imperial Shuttle TK-37059, requesting permission to dock,
she said, her heavily accented basic disappearing as her voice slipped into the precise, clipped cadence common to citizens of the Empire.
Copy, TK-37059. Ready for clearance codes.
Transmitting codes now,
she said before clicking off the comm channel.
You've done this before,
Nostral remarked, clearly as impressed and surprised as Theron.
Your accent is impeccable.
Easy to fake infancy talk,
she said, brushing away the compliment. The console beeped, and she pressed the button to reopen the channel.
TK-37059, you have clearance to land. Proceed to Hangar 14 in D-Wing.
Copy, Reaver Station,
Tefeth replied, then clicked off the channel a second time.
I thought Gorvitch said we were supposed to land in C-Wing,
Theron said.
Usually do,
Tefeth answered.
So why the change?
Maybe Gorvitch sold us out. Want to turn back?
No,
Theron said after a quick deliberation.
Go ahead and dock.
Tefeth brought the shuttle into the open hangar bay for a landing, and the airlock doors closed behind them. A pair of guards, both human, both male, emerged from a door leading into the station. But they didn't act as if they were expecting anything out of the ordinary.
Wait here,
Theron told the other two.
But be ready to bug out if something goes off the rails.
Exiting the shuttle, he approached the two guards, trying to appear casual, even as his mind was racing. There wasn't an ambush waiting for them, so Gorvitch hadn't betrayed them. But if these guards weren't on the take, they might want to inspect the shuttle, and Theron couldn't let that happen.
Gorvitch didn't say anything about sending a fresh face on this run,
one of the guards said. Theron let out a sigh of relief.
He told me we were supposed to dock in C-Wing,
Theron said, warming up to the part of a small-time thug working for the old Tian Brotherhood.
Had me worried.
C-Wing's reserved for that giant capital ship you saw on your way in. Had to shift some stuff around.
Could have given us a heads up,
Theron said.
To Gorvitch, the guard replied. Guess he didn't pass it on. Guess he wanted to make the new guy sweat,
the other guard said with a laugh.
Where's your friend?
The first one asked.
The one with that sexy voice.
Staying on the shuttle,
Theron said.
Keeping an eye on the cargo.
Yeah? What's the hole this time? Stims? Spice?
Band Holovitz?
Is this part of hazing the new guy? Theron asked. Gorvitch tell you to waste my time with all these questions?
Just trying to be friendly,
one of the guards said.
Maybe you can leave us a little free sample when you go.
I think we're done here, Theron said. We keep chatting and someone's gonna get suspicious.
Fine,
the first guard said, finally taking the hint.
We got other shuttles coming in anyway. Just keep your head down and don't do anything stupid, rookie,
the second warned him.
You get caught, we don't know you.
Theron waited for the guards to leave before returning to the shuttle.
Everything's good,
he said, giving a quick status update.
Sit tight. Everything goes smooth and I'll be back in a few hours.
May the Force be with you, Theron,
Nostaral said.
Don't mess up,
Tefith said, offering her own words of support. Theron left the shuttle and exited the hangar, making his way onto Reaver Station, marveling at the size and scope. The Empire understood the need to let military personnel enjoy a break from their daily routine. But unlike the Republic, it was paranoid about soldiers deserting whenever they landed on a world. To offset this, they'd designed Reaver Station to have all the amenities anyone would expect in a planetary port city, giving the soldiers a place to relax, but leaving them no other option but to return to their ship when their leave was over. Spread out over the station's four levels was a wide assortment of shops, bars, restaurants, holo theaters, casinos, sport courts, and clubs, all packed with men and women eager to cut loose before returning to the drudgery and discipline of their assigned posts on their respective ships. Theron's plan was simple enough. Sneak onto the Ascendant Spear while it was docked, slice into the computer systems, and plant the dormant virus. Next, he'd rig up the communications protocols to receive a special Republic transmission that would trigger the virus when the time was right. Then he'd slip off the ship, head back to the shuttle, and get off the station with no one the wiser. The fact that Reaver Station was a secure military facility would only make things easier. The only people on board either served in the military or had special authorization to be here. Because of that, security on the ships actually docked at the station was bound to be lax. For a vessel the size of the Spear, there'd be a constant stream of men and women coming and going, heading out into the station for some fun, then stumbling back to their bunks on the ship to rest for a few hours before heading out again. At most, they'd have to flash a boarding ID to the guards stationed at the hangar's entrance, a nod to the fact that nobody would be able to remember the names and faces of every person who was stationed on the ship. All Theron had to do was borrow a boarding ID from someone too drunk or preoccupied to notice it was missing so he could forge a copy. But first he had to figure out where the crew members of the Ascendant Spear were gathered. The bonds among those who served together on a ship were strong, and most personnel on leave tended to hang out with the same people they worked beside day after day. They would congregate in the same general area of the station, their sheer numbers driving away most of those on the station who served on smaller vessels. He made his way toward an information booth located near the hangar bays.
Welcome to Reaver Station, Corporal,
the woman behind the desk said. Her voice was chipper, and she had a wide smile plastered across her face. But there was something in her eyes that made Theron think her cheerfulness was just a facade, the result of Imperial training to boost the morale of the men and women arriving for a few precious days of R&R.
Just got in on a supply run, Theron said. First time here. Looking for a good place to grab some grub.
Normally, I'd suggest the Golden Galley, she said. Great food, good prices, and you can have them take it right off your payroll if you're a little short of credits. But you don't want to go there today.
Why not?
Theron asked, feigning ignorance.
Had a full capital ship arrive earlier today. They hit that place like a Fefsy swarm.
I'm not in a rush, Theron said. Care to tell me how to get there?
Following the woman's directions eventually brought Theron to his destination. The woman at the information booth's description of a deadly Fefsy swarm was accurate. The restaurant and every other establishment around it were overflowing with men and women in uniform. They spilled out into the streets, forming haphazard queues to wait outside the doors of any spot that served food or drink. Theron slowly made his way through the crowd, searching for an easy target that could provide him with a boarding ID. Many of the bars he passed were projecting the feed from the official Imperial News Hollow, where the crowd outside could watch, as a way to keep the people in line from becoming too impatient and unruly. It was hard to hear the newscasters over the din of the crowd, but the sharp trill indicating a breaking story caught Theron's attention. He stopped and turned his head up to hear the latest Imperial propaganda.
The Empire scored a major victory just hours ago with a surprise assault on the Republic agro-world of Ruan.
A cheer rose up from the crowd, but Theron was too shocked to join in. Ruan was a major producer of food for Coruscant and several other Ecumenopolis worlds. It was also deep inside Republic space, a planet most considered well beyond the reach of the Empire.
Enemy casualties are estimated in the thousands, as an Imperial fleet under the command of Moff Nezer unleashed an orbital bombardment that devastated production facilities on the surface.
And killed thousands of innocent civilians in the process, Theron thought.
The Republic fleet in the area was destroyed, with enemy reinforcements arriving too late to affect the outcome of the battle. An official press release from the office of the Minister of War reads as follows. Moff Nezor's resounding victory at Ruan demonstrates the strength of the Empire and exposes the vulnerability of the Republic. Those who say our enemy has gained the upper hand in the Galactic War must clearly recognize this day as proof that the Empire is stronger than it has ever been. The Republic is unable to defend its own worlds, and her citizens tremble before the might of the Imperial fleet. Their defeat and eventual surrender is inevitable. All hail the Immortal Emperor!
Theron turned away from the Hollow, ignoring the raucous celebrations of those around him. As bad as the attack itself had been, what it represented was far worse. The Hollow claimed capital ships had been involved in the attack. That meant the orders should have been transmitted using the Black Cipher. SIS should have known the attack was coming, but somehow the Republic was caught completely unprepared. It didn't make any sense.
Unless our cipher isn't working anymore, Theron thought.
The realization made Theron feel physically ill. He needed to speak to the director. He needed to know what had gone wrong. If there was a leak in SIS analytics, they might have to scrap the entire mission. Abandoning the still cheering crowd around the Golden Galley, he ran back to the hangar where they had docked and scrambled up and into the shuttle.
Why are you back so soon?
Tevith demanded as Theron burst in on them.
Something's wrong, he said, addressing Nos D'Aral. I need to speak with the director, or Jace, maybe both of them.
Impossible. We don't have a secure channel.
Theron rushed up to the cockpit. He quickly surveyed the hangar through the window until he spotted a communications terminal in the corner.
I can slice into the Imperial comm channels, he said. Piggyback our signal on the station's secure network. Scramble it with a basic SIS encryption and bounce it through half a dozen relays so nobody knows where it's originating from. Should buy us a minute or two of secure time.
Sounds risky,
Tevith said.
We don't have any choice,
Theron insisted, still speaking to Nos D'Aral.
Do what you have to do.
Theron exited the shuttle and raced over to the comm terminal, pulling his custom-designed slicer spike from the hip pocket of his uniform. The spike was small, about twice the size and thickness of a pen, with a small interface cable extending several centimeters from the bottom. He plugged the cable into one of the terminal's access ports and turned the spike on. A second later, the spike's short-range signal synced up with Theron's cybernetic implants, allowing him to interface directly with Reaver Station's communications network. His fingers flew over the keyboard as the spike relayed streams of data to his implants. It took only a minute for him to burrow his way through the various levels of electronic security and gain unrestricted access to the network's core operating system. It took several more minutes to set up the encryption and the complicated system of relay jumps. But it was a necessary precaution. He'd use them to buy a few minutes of secure transmission before the station's automated network systems responded to the unauthorized intrusion and shut them down. He raced back over to the shuttle and climbed inside.
Got it, he said as he settled into the pilot's seat.
Nos D'Aral and Tevith crowded in on either side of him. Theron switched the shuttle's transmitter on, keying it to the same frequency as the terminal in the hangar. He had to work fast, so he fired off an emergency priority signal to SIS, knowing protocols would relay it immediately to the director wherever he was. A few seconds later, the director's voice came through the ship's speaker. Adding video to the signal would only have made things more complicated.
Theron, what's wrong?
You heard about the attack on Ruan?
Of course. I'm in a debriefing with the Supreme Commander right now.
Is everything all right, Theron?
Jace's voice chimed in.
Where are you calling from?
Reaver Station.
Are you insane?
It's okay. The signal's secure, for now.
You can't know that. What if the...
I don't have much time, Theron said, cutting him off. I think the mission's been compromised.
Why?
Jace demanded.
The Empire should have used the Black Ciphers to transmit the orders to the capital ships. We should have known about the attack.
There was a moment of silence on the other end of the line, before Jace said,
We knew.
You knew?
Theron said, his mind struggling to grasp what he was hearing.
Why weren't we better prepared? Why didn't you do anything?
We sent medical supplies, food, and emergency volunteers,
Jace replied.
What about the reinforcements? Why were they too far away to get there in time? We should have scrambled one of our fleets.
We couldn't. The risk of tipping off the Empire was too great. If they found a fleet waiting for them on Ruan, they'd know we were intercepting their cipher transmissions.
Horror slowly dawned on Theron as he realized what Jace was saying.
You knew the Empire would wipe out our ships at Ruan? You knew they'd bombard the planet? Thousands of civilians are dead, and you did nothing to help them?
I had no choice. If we don't stop the Ascendant Spear, we don't stop this war. You're worried about thousands of innocent lives, but I'm worried about millions.
Theron didn't say anything. He sat in the pilot's chair, speechless, as Satil's warning ran through his mind.
Jace fights this war out of revenge. It clouds his judgment. It can make him do terrible things if he believes they are necessary to save the Republic.
Theron,
Jace said from the other end of the transmission.
Theron, are you still there?
We're here.
Nostral spoke up.
You have to see the big picture, Theron. We have to wait for our chance to stop the Spear, no matter how horrific these attacks may be.
Attacks?
Theron said, snapping out of his daze.
Ruan wasn't the only one?
Theron,
the director's voice snapped.
Your job is to get on board the Spear. This doesn't concern you.
Where will they strike next?
Theron demanded, ignoring the director.
Jace, where?
Duro,
the Supreme Commander said with a heavy sigh.
They're going to hit the shipyards at 36 standard hours.
Duro was a heavily industrialized and densely populated world. Though the planet itself was too polluted to support life, billions lived in the orbital cities above it. An Imperial attack on Duro would have minimal long-term strategic value for the Empire, but the casualties for the Republic were almost too catastrophic to fathom.
You have to stop them,
Theron said.
Set an ambush! Take out the Imperial fleet the second they enter the system!
That's not going to happen. The Spear isn't going to be involved in the attack.
We're increasing Republic patrols in the sector,
the director added.
But if we scale them up too fast, the Empire will grow suspicious.
Theron, sometimes sacrifices have to be made.
But you have to draw the line somewhere!
The Empire won't, so neither can we.
Satil was right about you,
Theron thought, remembering her final argument.
Hate will transform you into the very evil that you are fighting so hard against.
There's nothing you can do to stop this, Theron,
the director told him.
So do your duty. Complete your mission. The Republic is counting on you.
The transmission abruptly ended, though Theron wasn't sure if they had cut him off or if the Reaver's automated security systems had finally unraveled his tricks and disconnected the signal.
Chapter 23
Theron stood up from the pilot's seat slowly, his body and mind numb.
Theron?
Nosterol asked.
Are you okay?
The director was right, Theron replied. There's nothing we can do. An Imperial fleet is going to hit Duro and we can't stop it.
Call back, Tepeth suggested. Tell them you quit.
There may be another way. If the Spear was part of the Imperial fleet attacking Duro, Jace would be willing to set up an ambush.
But it's not,
Theron said, his mind unable to follow where the Jedi was heading.
The Spear will still be here when Duro is attacked.
Maybe not. Can you send off another message?
Theron shook his head. Used every trick in my bag to pull that off. The network security programs automatically adjust and adapt to slicer attacks. They'll be able to lock me out almost instantly if I try it again. Probably even trace the location to this hangar.
Then we need someone to deliver it.
Nosterol turned to Tepeth.
We need your help.
Not trying anything to get us killed,
she warned.
All you have to do is deliver a message. Tell Jace Malcolm that the Ascendant Spear will be at Duro.
She'll never be able to get a message to the Republic Supreme Commander,
Theron said, suddenly understanding where Nosterol was headed.
But I know who can. Satil.
I should have thought of her myself. Go to the Jedi Enclave on Coruscant,
he said to Tepeth, speaking quickly.
Ask for Grandmaster Satil Shan. Tell her everything that happened here.
We fly Imperial Shuttle to Coruscant, we get blown from the sky,
Tepeth protested.
Go back to Jagani Port and take my shuttle,
Nosterol said.
It's faster anyway.
We leave, you two going to be stuck on River Station,
Tepeth reminded them. From her tone, Theron wasn't sure if she was worried about them or sarcastically pointing out something obvious she thought they were foolishly forgetting.
Theron and I can look after ourselves.
Tell the authorities that I sent you, Theron said. Grandmaster Shan will listen if you mention my name.
Grandmaster Shan?
Tepeth said, her eyes narrowing suspiciously as she put two and two together.
Theron Shan, you related?
She's my mother,
Theron said, the situation too urgent for him to even care whether Nosterol already knew. He expected Tepeth to make some kind of comment, maybe ask why he wasn't a Jedi. But all she said was,
What's he need for us?
Another 10,000 credits, Theron promised. And a get-out-of-jail-free card if you're ever arrested in Republic space.
Deal.
Nosterol turned his attention back to Theron.
You still need to get on the Spear. If you don't sabotage the systems, Carrot will be able to escape the Republic ambush.
I'm on it, Theron said. What about you?
I'm going to convince my old apprentice to take her ship to Duro.
Pulling the hood of his cloak up over his head to obscure his features, the Jedi slipped out of the shuttle and took off, moving with the supernatural speed of one driven by the Force. Theron watched him until he vanished through the hangar door, leaving him and Tepeth alone.
Can I trust you on this?
He asked the Twi'lek.
Millions of innocent lives are at stake.
10,000 credits to deliver one message? Stupid not to do it.
Good. Tell Satil Shan everything that happened here. She has to convince Jace to send the Republic fleet to Duro.
Theron wondered what the director or Jace would say once they learned that a Twi'lek enforcer for the old Tian Brotherhood now knew all the critical details of their top-secret mission. He'd probably get court-martialed, and rightfully so. But he trusted Tepeth. More important, he didn't have any other options. Not if he wanted to keep Duro from being the site of one of the war's bloodiest massacres. He started to leave the ship, then paused to say one last thing to Tepeth.
Remember, he warned her, double-cross us, and you don't get paid.
Got it,
she said, her leku flicking in annoyance.
Said stupid not to do it. We're not stupid.
Nosterol was little more than a blur of motion and movement as he raced through the corridors of Reaver Station. The Imperial soldiers he flew past reacted with a mix of surprise, curiosity, and alarm, but he came and went so fast, none of them fully realized what had happened. Left in his wake, they exchanged a few puzzled glances with their friends, then laughed off the odd but seemingly harmless encounter, as their minds convinced them that the person who'd just run by couldn't possibly have been moving that fast. He didn't know exactly where he was going, but he let the Force guide him. When they'd first arrived at River Station, he had gently reached out with his mind until he sensed his former Padawan. Now he was using her familiar presence, shrouded in the dark side, but still unmistakable after so many years, as a beacon to guide him to her. At the same time, he was careful to mask his own presence so as not to warn her of his coming. As he drew closer, it would be impossible to completely hide himself from her awareness should she suddenly choose to focus her thoughts on finding him. But there was no reason she would do so, not until he was so close that it no longer mattered. As he drew near the Ascendant Spear's hangar, he slowed his pace. There were more people here, men and women returning from or heading out on shore leave, but none of the off-duty soldiers paid him any special heed. Those coming back to the ship were tired and inebriated, and those leaving were too eager to begin their leave to pay close enough attention to the hooded figure's hidden features to realize he wasn't human. That changed when he reached two guards on duty at one of the many boarding ramps leading from the hangar floor into the spear itself.
"Who are you?"
one demanded, stepping in his path. She moved with a sure confidence that Nos D'Aral recognized all too well. He knew there would be little chance of using the Force to persuade her to let him pass. Should it be necessary, he was ready to resort to violence to get inside. But he thought there might still be another way. He threw back his hood, revealing his alien features. He took deep, slow breaths through his mask, which gave off a deep, angry hiss in response as he tilted his head back slightly to make his tusks more prominent.
"My name is Darth Malishi,"
he said, dropping his already baritone voice a full octave lower.
"I have business with Darth Karad."
The guard hesitated, but held her ground, and he realized she would need more convincing. The Keldor extended his hand, while simultaneously reaching out with the Force to apply a faint pressure on her windpipe.
She threw her hands up to her throat, and her eyes went wide with terror as her air supply was cut off. After a few moments, he released his hold, causing her to collapse to her knees as she took in deep, desperate gulps of oxygen.
"When a superior wants to pass, you would be wise to step aside."
"Forgive me, my lord,"
the guard gasped as she crawled out of his way. Keeping her eyes carefully averted to the ground, she said,
"I will inform Darth Karad of your arrival."
"Darth Karad is expecting me. I refuse to wait so my presence can be announced by some groveling worm."
He sneered as he brushed past her. The second guard made no move to stop him. Instead, he cowered off to one side, trying very hard not to be noticed. The Jedi moved quickly up the boarding ramp and into the spear, not certain how long the ruse would work. Though the guards hadn't dared to stop him, once he was gone, they would almost surely inform someone on board the ship of their honored guest's arrival. It wouldn't take long after that for someone to realize something was wrong and order security to hunt down the intruder. Still guided by the power of the Force emanating from Darth Karad, he made his way deeper and deeper into the ship. He could feel evil and corruption enveloping him, growing steadily stronger during his descent. And he knew it wasn't because of his former Padawan's presence. When Darth Mekkis had created the Ascendant Spear, she used a combination of experimental technology and Sith alchemy to imbue the ship itself with energies of the dark side. By the time Nos D'Aral stepped into the turbolift that would take him to the black heart of the vessel, the Jedi was feeling physically nauseated from the effects. But he also sensed he was nearing his goal. As he dropped into the very bowels of the ship, the claustrophobic feeling of the dark side pressing in on him from all sides was so strong that he almost didn't sense the soldiers waiting in the corridor just beyond the turbolift's doors. At the last possible instant, the Force granted him a sudden premonition of the lethal trap. pulling his green-bladed lightsaber from his belt, he dropped to the ground, pressing himself face down flat on the floor as the turbolift came to a stop on the spear's lowest level. The guard's blaster bolts shredded the turbolift's doors as they slid open, ricocheting over Nostral's head as they carved an arc at waist height. The Jedi responded by lashing out with the Force, hurling the four heavily armored soldiers several meters back down the corridor. Before they even hit the ground, he had sprung to his feet, charging toward them as he threw his lightsaber sidearm. The spinning blade struck the nearest of his foes, slicing through the chest plate of his battle armor and into the vulnerable flesh beneath. The surviving three guards didn't try to regain their feet, instead firing wildly at him from where they lay sprawled on the floor. The Keldor angled his charge toward the sidewall, leaping and planting a foot halfway up the surface to give him leverage for a high, twisting spin that scraped the ceiling, his arms tucked in close to his chest and his horizontal body perfectly parallel to the floor. The unexpected move again caught the soldiers off guard, their bolts whizzing beneath him. He landed on his feet amid his still-prone adversaries, his lightsaber flying back into his hand as he recalled it with the Force. He turned sideways, narrowly dodging fire from the closest soldier, while a pair of quick flicks with his lightsaber deflected the bolts from the other two harmlessly off to either side. The hard heel of his boot slammed down on the helmeted head of the man at his feet. At the same time, he used the Force to pick up the other two and send them crashing into the ceiling before letting them drop back down to the floor. Momentarily stunned, all three were defenseless against the quick series of cuts and thrusts from his lightsaber that finished them off. Knowing reinforcements wouldn't be far behind, he raced down the hall and burst through the door at the end, coming face to face with Darth Carid and her two apprentices. They were standing in a large circular chamber, his former Padawan in the center, a male human on her right, and a female pure-blooded Sith on her left. Behind Carid, he could see a large crystal sphere, and on the sidewall he saw a small control console. Otherwise, the room was empty. All three of his adversaries wore black armor and sported the fierce facial tattoos so common in those who followed the dark side. Their lightsabers were drawn and ready, the shimmering blades casting a crimson glow over the dimly lit room. Clearly they were expecting him, though whether they had sensed his presence through the Force or had simply been warned by the guards outside, he couldn't say.
"I knew you would come for me one day, Nostral,"
Carid said, her lips curling into a smile of anticipation.
"But even you should know better than to challenge me here on my own ship."
"A Jedi pursues the dark side, no matter where it tries to hide,"
he answered.
"Noble and foolish as ever,"
she mocked.
"You have no idea of how powerful I've become. Malgus showed me the true power,"
she said, her voice slowly rising with each word.
"He led me down the path to greatness. He revealed the secrets you dared not face. He taught me to embrace all things that Jedi fear,"
she shouted, her voice echoing off the circular chamber's walls.
"Now I will use them to destroy you and every follower you have brought onto my ship."
"I have come alone,"
Nostral replied, remaining calm in the face of her growing anger.
"It was my decision to send you to Darth Malgus. I started you on this path. No one else is to blame."
"How quaint,"
she said with a sneer.
"I thought you'd led a strike team here to kill me, but you just want to save your Padawan from the perils of the dark side."
"I will purge the galaxy of the evil I unleashed upon it,"
he said, his voice betraying nothing beyond firm resolution.
"Whether this ends in redemption or death is your decision, not mine."
Carid casually twirled her lightsaber, carving long, lazy circles in the air as her apprentices fanned out to either side, slowly moving into position to flank the Jedi.
"I heard tales of your great prowess in battle while I was on Tython,"
she told him.
"But during all my years as a Padawan, I never saw any evidence of it. I'm curious to see how badly your reputation has been exaggerated.
Nostral sensed Imperial reinforcements drawing near. Spinning back to the door behind him, he thrust his lightsaber into the access panel on the wall, sending up a shower of sparks as he fried the circuits, sealing the door so nobody else could enter the room. He wheeled back to face Carrot and her apprentices and slowly circled to his left, keeping his back against the wall as he tried to gauge the strength of his opponents.
You've given yourself over to the Ascendant Spear,
Nostral warned his former Padawan, holding his own weapon steady in front of him, two hands on the hilt in a classic defensive posture.
It has consumed your thoughts and training. In learning to master this ship, your other skills have atrophied.
That is why I don't intend to face you alone,
Carrot said. A slight nod of the Falling's head sent her apprentices rushing forward, and Master Nostral braced to meet their charge. Chapter 24. Theron had no idea what Nostral was planning, but he knew he had to get on the Ascendant Spear quickly. Instead of heading back to the Golden Galley, where he might hope to steal a boarding pass, he headed for the hangar where the ship had docked. The scene was one of chaos. Hundreds of crew members milled around the hangar, clearly agitated. Six guards stood with weapons drawn, lined up at the base of each of the half-dozen ramps leading into the ship, blocking the way. Theron slipped into the crowd, studying the guards. He quickly realized they weren't allowing anyone to leave the vessel. Anyone trying to board was subject to a lengthy interrogation and inspection of their ID before being allowed to pass. The delay was causing a steady increase in the crowd waiting impatiently to be allowed back on. Whatever Nostral had done had caused security to clamp down hard.
What's going on?
Theron asked a tall woman beside him.
Your guess is as good as mine, she answered,
clearly annoyed and not entirely sober.
I just want to get back to my bunk.
There were angry murmurs in the crowd, and a handful of people actually pushed through to verbally confront the guards at the base of the boarding ramps, something that would never have happened a year ago. Imperial citizens were raised in a military culture that trained them to respect authority, but the traditional discipline of the Imperial troops had been frayed by their recent setbacks in the war. And with hundreds of tired and drunk crew members coming back from R&R, tempers were high. An idea struck Theron. It was crazy, impulsive, and risky. In other words, just his style. He worked his way through the crowd, heading out of the hangar and back into Reaver Station. He remembered passing by a small security post, a room where the soldiers responsible for inspecting the incoming vessels could pass the time while they waited for arrivals. With Sea Wing shut down to other traffic because of the Spear's presence, the guard post was unstaffed. Theron paused at the door, glancing around quickly, and made sure nobody in the crowd of people passing by was paying any attention to him. They were too wrapped up in their own thoughts and conversations, or focused on meeting up with friends to enjoy their brief time on the station away from whatever vessel they served on. He pulled the slicer spike from his pocket, concealing it in his palm as he clipped it into the access panel on the wall. He was careful to stand straight and tall, his shoulders back and his head held high, as he quickly sliced through the locked door. Hunching over and other furtive behavior would draw far more attention from the people walking by than someone who clearly looked like he had every right to be there. The door slid open, and Theron stepped confidently into the small room beyond before closing it behind him. The guard post was crowded, four chairs packed in around a large control console, with vid screens displaying the various hangars across the station. Empty, pending arrival, security check in progress, cleared to board. Every hangar and Sea Wing was set to the same status, inactive. Because hangar security needed to know the number and size of incoming vessels so they could properly handle inspections, the guard post had access to Reaver Station's external scanners and the early warning beacons. The beacons were the first line of defense, strategically placed to detect incoming vessels long before they actually reached Reaver Station. It didn't take long for Theron to slice into the system. The scanners currently showed a few dozen Imperial vessels in the sector, arriving, departing, or waiting for clearance from the central tower to land. He quickly verified that Tefith was gone. The status display of the hangar where they had docked now read empty. Satisfied, he made a small adjustment to one of the settings on his slicer spike, then began to feed a steady stream of false data into the system. Several dozen vessels, ranging in size from single pilot fighters all the way up to full capital ships, suddenly materialized on the scanners, popping into existence near the early warning beacons. The data mimicked the effect of a large, well-coordinated fleet dropping from hyperspace all at once on the farthest edges of the sector. A few seconds later, alarms began to ring out through Reaver Station, warning of the simulated Republic attack. The sizzle and hum of clashing blades echoed off the walls of the cavernous chamber as Karrad's apprentices engaged Nostoral. Their attacks were basic variations of the Makashi style, a precise and economical lightsaber form designed for maximum results with minimal movement by stressing jabs and thrusts. Their skills were raw. Like Karrad, much of their training had focused on developing the unique abilities required to help their master command the Ascendant Spear. They were still able to call on the fury of the dark side to move with astonishing strength and speed, but they hadn't mastered the subtle art of allowing the Force to guide their blades. They were wielding the weapon instead of allowing it to become an extension of themselves. Nevertheless, they were relentless in their attacks, and there were two of them. Nostoral was forced onto the defensive to ward off their attacks, occasionally slipping in quick maneuvers drawn from the more aggressive Ataru form to keep them off balance. Darth Karrad merely observed the battle at first, keeping a safe distance from the deadly blade of her former master, while his focus and energies were drained by her apprentices. Realizing he would eventually wear down if he allowed the battle to become a duel of attrition, the Keldor countered with Jem So, the fifth of the seven recognized lightsaber forms. Concentrating his counterattacks exclusively on the physically smaller female Sith, he unleashed a series of savage blows, driving her into a stumbling retreat. For an instant, he was left completely exposed to her human companion, but the unexpected ferocity of Nostoral's sudden switch in tactics caught him unprepared. He hesitated a fraction of a second before thrusting forward, giving the Jedi enough time to leap aside, even as his Sith opponent tripped over her own backpedaling feet and fell to the floor. Nostoral lunged forward to deliver a coup de grace, but his momentum was suddenly reversed, and he found himself sailing backwards as Darth Karrad hit him with a powerful Force push. He was able to roll into a back somersault as he hit the ground and sprang back to his feet, but his brief advantage was lost. The two apprentices closed on him again, cutting him off before he could even think.